I famously started a cult on accident. I disbanded it on purpose.
You were called like Father John.
It literally still happens.
Yeah.
Like people see me in the hallway at a Bitcoin conference. And like, yo, Father John. I kind of found my tribe of like, okay, these guys are weird as hell, but I'm sort of weird. And they're the only ones that want to talk to me about Bitcoin. And that's all I want to talk about right now. So I literally just started another room. And I called it like Sunday Satoshi Service. Woosah, like put the peace emoji hands up. Deacon T-Bang, he came in and he started reading prayers. Someone else came in and they started to sing a song. The next week it was like 7 hours of people confessing shit and sins. I was tired. I was like, yo, I got kids, I gotta go to dinner, man, I'm tired. Max Kaiser would come on there and do his little Southern Baptist preaching.
That's so crazy.
And Eric Weiss had been on there, and Sailor popped in from time to time, and like everybody, American Hoddle and Tina and NVK and like Jimmy Song and Brandon Quito. In fact, what happened was I just said hallelujah and everyone just started cracking up. Bitcoin Mitchell, he used to write this like these dope songs. Like I remember one of them was I saved Satoshis because Satoshi saved me, and I think that's the most brilliant line ever.
Yes.
And then we have like sponsors reaching out to us. I'm like, whoa, that's when I knew I had to shut it down.
Welcome back to the Bitcoin Nova. Today I'm here with John Ficuri, the CEO of Stacking Sats Inc.
Thanks for joining me today. And don't worry about, you know, whatever you had going on, because I know you're busy. So thank you again for being here.
I'm excited. Thanks for having me.
So yeah, so I have the CEO of Stacking Sats Inc. today. I'm super excited to hear about it, especially because I heard about you from my husband, who is friends with your cousin. So it's really cool to
small world.
Yeah, it's cool to have a real Bitcoin connection in real life. So thank you for doing this. And I can't wait to hear about your company and what you've been doing. Because from what I know, you started this treasury company in 2021, was it?
Yeah, I mean, I guess like there wasn't really like the jargon of Bitcoin treasury companies in 2021. And there weren't a lot of companies like, you know, stacking sats on their balance sheet. Mm-hmm. All of the owners of our company were Bitcoiners.
Uh-huh.
And it just became a natural conversation. So in 2020, 2021, mostly 2020, I brought this idea to our team. Michael Saylor was doing it at this point too. And I was just like, we should be doing the same thing. I'm not sure why we're not.
Yeah.
And so it was met with a lot of resistance. And then I sort of took a dictatorial position on that one and just like, okay, well, we're doing it. So we did that in 2021. But yeah, there wasn't like Bitcoin treasury company. That wasn't the jargon.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't the perspective. So yeah, I guess in some ways we're doing it. We weren't taking any leverage. We weren't taking any loans. We weren't taking investment to sort of accelerate our strategy, but we were just taking profits and not wanting to hold it in dollars and just started buying Bitcoin. So
it's just saving your excess cash, right? Cash reserves.
Yeah, for the most part.
Mm-hmm. So was it Michael Saylor that convinced you to start it?
No, I mean, not necessarily. I mean, like it wasn't like we were a corporate, we weren't like some publicly traded company. We weren't like necessarily using the same mechanisms. It just was another sort of indicator, like, why am I not? Like, what? There aren't any reasons that I shouldn't. We wanted to make sure our bank wasn't really opposed to it. They sort of were, but what were they going to do?
Mm-hmm.
If they debanked us, you know, which wasn't, honestly, I should have probably considered that even more. I didn't. Like, occupation choke point wasn't a thing, like, back then.
Yeah.
And it just didn't seem like a big risk. And so we were buying Bitcoin. And
did you have any
parts of the meeting update would be weekly just being like, what is up-to-date Bitcoin balance?
Was there any sort of, since you didn't think about Operation Choke Point 2.0, did you have any sort of issues with the SEC
we're not a publicly traded company. I don't think we have any air. Yeah. So, I mean, we don't have any air of like, I don't know, it's like hard to get the SEC's attention. Our investors are mostly just, you know, supporters of me. And what we've been building. So there wasn't any like investor perspective. I mean, Ross, our CFO, who has been somewhat publicly working on this with me and is brilliant and I love him, but he was my biggest headache. Like he was just getting over him was my biggest headache.
So how did you do it? How did you convince them? Did you do like a, you know, meeting with the board? Did you give them materials to read up on? And how
This is a company that I own 65% of, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a lot you can do when you own the majority of the company. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't run my business in that way. Like, I don't beat my chest and say we're doing what I say. But there are times where, you know, I've taken into account all perspectives. And to me, it was a very straightforward decision. Ross also feels that way today. So mm-hmm. there's not a lot of like controversy looking back. The scoreboard is clear. Yeah. I made a decision and I had to live with it. And, you know, when you are the CEO of a company or you're the leader of an organization or you're the parent in the household, right? Like all kind of the buck stops here. And I was responsible, and I heard Ross, I heard Adam, I heard the team, and I made a decision and we moved forward.
Yeah. And it's like when it's your company, again, you don't want to say that I'm calling all the shots without any input, but when you know so much about Bitcoin and you understand it and you know that it can preserve your cash and grow it instead of just watching it, you know, get depleted by inflation, you know, you have to make that call, you know. So it's like something that's for the, you know, best of the company. And I'm sure they're very glad you did that.
Yeah, I mean, there are risks, right? Like the reality of it is, like, you know, if the company's struggling, all of a sudden Bitcoin's struggling. I mean, like, framework mm-hmm. is decorrelated from Bitcoin, and like, we're not a Bitcoin mining company. We're not an exchange. We don't sell wallets. You know, we deliver managed IT services, cloud infrastructure services, mm-hmm. Unified communication services, cybersecurity, mostly for small, medium-sized enterprises throughout the United States. And like the sort of, it didn't feel like there was that much of a correlative risk. But in the case that, you know, framework was maybe struggling and Bitcoin is struggling, then that is a risk, right? Holding in cash does make sense. And I don't know, like, I didn't really necessarily think about just like the inflationary pressure per se, but it just felt like, hey, over a 4 or 5 year time, you know, span, I think we could just do 4 or 5 times the amount of work and value, right? So, mm-hmm. you know, if we're making X amount of dollars and I put that amount of dollars into Bitcoin, right, over 4 or 5 years, we may literally, in terms of just like productive economic output, be able to double the amount of work we've done.
Yeah.
And Bitcoin did half the work. So,
you're using your excess, you know, cash. You know, you said you weren't leveraged, you know, so at that point, you're figuring that, you know, if you just average in the company's earnings, you know, into, you know, a reserve asset like Bitcoin, you're just not taking on leverage. So it's not as risky over time, you know, when you look in the big picture. But have you started to change your framework? Do you do more leverage now?
That's the real genesis of Stacking Sats Inc. So mm-hmm. Stacking Sats Inc. wholly owns Framework. But for Framework customers, it doesn't really matter, right? And so we don't really want to confuse our customers. Framework IT is still Framework IT. They don't call us to buy Bitcoin. They call us because they have day-to-day IT needs, and we're guiding them on large you know, consulting needs and mm-hmm. infrastructure needs and cloud and cybersecurity needs, et cetera, right? So that doesn't really change things for them. It does for sort of our, you know, our strategy high level. So Stacking Sats Inc. owns Framework IT, mm-hmm. and it ultimately is just our engine. It's our Bitcoin mine. We don't have ASICs sitting in a data center somewhere. Our mine is delivering, you know, predictable IT outcomes and delivering value in that realm. And we produce Bitcoin by doing that. So in a lot of ways, we're just a synthetic Bitcoin miner. We have taken some investment. We are planning to take a modest amount of leverage, and we, you know, continue to plan to drive a certain amount of our profits into Bitcoin and just run a responsible business. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people are just like, wow, this is a crazy idea. And like, oh, wow, look what they're doing. And we've kind of been tagged. And it's like the only sort of crazy thing that we're doing is just running a business.
Yeah.
And that seems to be the sort of compelling component. And I don't know, I think like, there is a real interesting sort of dynamic that's happening here where everyone's looking at Michael Saylor. And listen, I love Michael. I've gotten a lot of good advice from Michael Saylor. I've listened to a lot of Michael Saylor. Eric Weiss has advised me and has been, you know, a good friend. And I'm so grateful to have, you know, some like really brilliant minds to be able to tap. But like, everyone just thinks that they can be Michael Saylor. And I don't think I can be Michael Saylor. Mm-hmm. I really don't.
If you don't know about multisig, I highly recommend learning about it. The Bitcoin Advisor can help you understand what it is and why it's important. Scan this code for more info or click on the description below. Also, don't forget to check out Satoshis. This isn't just fashion, it's signal. Wear the message, plant the ideas, and use my code to get 10% off your order with my link in the description below. Every order you place helps support my channel through the Bitcoin Legging Network.
I have a high opinion of myself, but I don't think I could be Michael Saylor. And I was playing golf with one of my really good friends, Crypto Graffiti. He's like a really well-known and just brilliant Bitcoin artist. And I was like, bro, you know how many times we've watched Tiger Woods hit a golf ball and we can't hit a golf ball like Tiger Woods, right? So this idea that you can just watch Michael Saylor and you can be Michael Saylor is crazy to me. And so we're just trying to run a healthy business and ultimately leverage what we do well.
Yeah.
And ultimately be able to produce more Bitcoin with a dollar than we could as an individual and as we plan to when we go public, which is where we're headed next.
That's amazing. When do you think that might happen? Like, do you have some sort of...
We're putting a tremendous amount of effort. There are a lot of targets for us to be able to pursue. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot I can really say publicly about it at this point, except for that that is our pursuit. Mm-hmm. We have the right people in place. We have the right investors in place. Some of my best friends happen to be the people that work on these deals. And it's just like independent before we even got into Bitcoin. So Joe Carlosar is a really good friend of mine. We've known each other for 15 years. Neither of us have been in Bitcoin for 15 years. And he just happens to be one of my best friends, right?
That's amazing.
And he happens to be an intersect. Yeah. And so,
Found out he's from the area too.
Yeah. Yeah. He lives up the street. Mm-hmm. He lives up the street. So anyway, yeah, we've been buddies from, Chicago circles for a long time. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, Joe aside, he's great. We just have we're blessed. We have the right team, the right support. We have a really, really good business. We're in an industry that makes a lot of sense. That sort of is on trend with where the world is headed. It's growing independently and is ripe for us to be able to take over a lot of other acquisition targets to kind of grow our company and grow our ability to stack more and more Bitcoin.
That's great. I'm excited for you guys. And I think it's the right move. I think it's the right move for companies, for families, for anybody who wants to create a treasury reserve of their own. It's something that I think everybody should have.
I've been trying to, where I'm at now is, or one of the things I'm trying to do is just sort of outsource our playbook. There's been this cloak of mystery I've been sort of hearing whispers and I was like, no, here are all the answers. We built it. You're welcome. If you can do it now, I do think that there are better businesses positioned to do this. I think not every entrepreneur of a small business can go and raise multi-million dollars worth of capital to ultimately lever a strategy like this. But if you can, then you should.
Mm-hmm.
Well, our position is that, the way we look at this without being too long-winded is Bitcoin's good for everyone. Mm-hmm. And if you can buy, if you don't have a company, then you should just buy Bitcoin as an individual. Mm-hmm. As an individual, for most, especially Americans, the best leverage and pretty much the only leverage they can get for most Americans is a mortgage. I'm not a financial advisor. I don't play that. But, to me, if you can get 3-5% over 30 years mm-hmm. and you understand Bitcoin, to me, that seems like a reasonable bet. And if it doesn't work out, your husband probably isn't that mad at you, but I imagine you guys are pretty aligned anyway, but for the mm-hmm. general, American. So, but for others, right, if you have a business and you have a really productive business, especially a business with really, really recurring revenue, so you don't have ebbs and tides and become a forced seller in a bad spot. Then you really start to become a really attractive sort of wrapper and envelope and protective layer to purchase Bitcoin. And I think there are times where it makes sense, I think, to be a Bitcoin, to sort of develop a Bitcoin treasury strategy. Mm-hmm. And I think probably not in other companies. And I think it just sort of matters, individually sort of on those circumstances, your ability to raise capital and sort of the nature of your business and the trajectory of that.
And it's nice that you are sharing your playbook on that for others who would want to follow those strategies, because people can choose to do it that way where they, take leverage so they can accumulate more. But other people could just use their excess cash reserves. Some people just have excess cash and they don't have to take leverage if they don't want to. It's just a good place, a better place to store your money to grow in the future. It's nice that you're open sourcing it. You're allowing people to follow along.
Well, it's funny. So I was in Vegas. I'm so sorry. I just want to make sure my nanny's taking care of kids. But the funny thing is we were in Vegas focused on going public. And actually, we decided after talking to Eric and I was talking to Saylor, I was talking to others, and I kind of came to this conclusion that, hey, we could just run the same strategy private and then pick when we want to go public. you know, like, I don't want to like badmouth like any of these other Tiggers, but I'm looking at them. They have no operations. They're not profitable. Mm-hmm. They've like absolutely levered themselves as much as they can. And now what? Right? Like, now what? What's the next move? Mm-hmm. Right. So Saylor was on record the other day with talking to Joe Burnett, who's running strategy, Bitcoin strategy for Semler. And the first thing he says, well, you know, step one is to make sure they're not hemorrhaging cash. Make sure the operating company is healthy. And it's like, wait a second. No one's actually got an operating company. Like, there's so few operating companies. Everyone's copying Saylor, but they're not listening to him.
Yeah.
And like, I'm not that smart. I'm not that brilliant. So I'm just like, hey, we have company, more money coming in than going out. We take some of that money, we borrow more, and we make sure we can service that debt. Like, you know, normal debits and credits. And like, we're not being geniuses. We just did a little bit of math. And if you do that math, it works out that you can, you know, outpace Bitcoin, you know, slightly. And depending on if you're in a bear or sort of choppy market, then significantly. And so, yeah. You know, while we still sort of have ambitions to go public, when I was in Vegas, my focus actually wasn't to stay private and build the model that we did. Mm-hmm. It just sort of was like the way that it made most sense for us to kind of pursue going public. And so we sort of like reversed sort of our perspective of, instead of building it sort of top down, building it bottom up. And that seemed to have resonated with a lot of Bitcoin maximalists, especially, who are probably asking the same questions as you and I, or like, wait, how does this make sense for everybody? Mm-hmm. Like, how is this actually going to prop up for all these companies that just ultimately bought a zombie company and are, mm-hmm. you know, issuing all types of instruments to buy more Bitcoin? And I think it'll work for some, but I think. You know, I don't know if it's going to work for everyone.
Yeah. I mean, again, if you don't have cash flows coming in, like if you're not doing well as a company, is that what that?
Yeah. Or I mean, you know, there are literally, there are companies that have bought 50, 100 Bitcoin that literally have not only not revenue or cash flow, I mean, they don't have any footprint of a business. Mm-hmm. Like there's no attempt to generate revenue. So I don't listen.
Well, that can be stupid.
I want everyone to do well. The more people are buying Bitcoin, the more Bitcoin goes up. So yeah. I root for that. I'm still honest. I don't know how to like to not
well, there's just it's like, because you're just pointing out the level of human greed that could take place, because you're thinking people are either FOMOing their company into something where they know they don't have, you know, the company to back it up. So then there's a chance that, you know, they risk insolvency and they would have to, you know, sell their Bitcoin in that case. So it's in order to not lose their company type of idea. So I think that's what it is. But yeah, it's a great idea for people, as long as they don't, you know, over leverage themselves or, you know, buy too much Bitcoin that they might have to sell it one day. Yep. So it's a crazy landscape that we're living in, because you keep seeing, you guys did it in 2021, but now you're seeing, you know, company after company talking about how they're doing this. So this is, and then I heard even recently that there's going to be now access to treasury companies through 401ks, which will unlock, you know, trillions of dollars. And I've even heard about, you know, about how you talked about getting capital or raising capital or taking a loan or, you know, leverage on your house. Like, now you can actually take leverage on your Bitcoin. You can actually get Bitcoin loans through Fannie Mae.
Don't take leverage on your Bitcoin.
No, I know. But
I think what you're referring to is that you can consider it as collateral.
Well, just the fact that companies are now considering, not to say that I don't agree that you should do that, but just to see that a company like Fannie Mae is coming out saying, we consider it collateral now.
Yeah, I think that's huge. I mean, I think that's huge news. I think the 401k thing, the executive order, I think people are a little overstating. I do think, I mean, eventually, right, this all happens, right? Like the reality of it is it's already happening, because there are a bunch of companies that are in the Fortune 500, or excuse me, the S&P 500, that either are buying, will buy, and people are having passive flows and the SPY regularly. But the executive order really was just saying that, you know, the president wants to see the sort of regulatory landscape provide for that. I mean, 401ks are governed by ERISA. I'm hardly an ERISA attorney, but it is incredibly complex. And there is just all these like lawsuits that come to play. And that's why when you look at most 401k plans at any, you know, major company, even ours, it's just like vanilla, like crap funds that just don't generate any yield. And Bitcoiners are familiar with this sort of landscape, and that's why they Bitcoin. But It's not as like simple as what Trump's executive order was the other day, which I certainly think is encouraging, right? Because I do think those regulatory sort of that regulatory landscape needs to be affected. But it's just a function of time. And I think this is what you were heading toward, right? Like Bitcoin every day becomes less and less risky. More and more of the world's adopting it. I was saying this the other day, and I think this a lot of times, like I have to step back over the last 10 or 11 years. There's just any day there is a story that had it been the story when I first got into Bitcoin, it would have been the most massive thing ever, right? And any of the things that you just listed are examples of that. But I was thinking about how Bitcoin passed Amazon as the fifth largest asset. And, you know, I was thinking about 1% of the world really sort of understands Bitcoin. And honestly, that's sort of a stretch. I mean, if you really think about it, there's just like a fraction, it's just a small fraction of the world that understand Bitcoin. And it's the fifth largest asset in the world. 99% of the world understands Amazon. 99% of the world understands Apple. 99% of the world understands Microsoft and understands NVIDIA. Now, they may not understand, you know, the intricacies of their business, but they know exactly what they are. They know exactly why they want to own them. And yet, Bitcoin is the fifth largest asset and 1% of the world owns it. What happens when 5? What happens when 10? And so all this stuff just doesn't matter. It's just sort of noise. It's like, you know, the fifth game of Michael Jordan's career when you know he'd be the greatest player ever. And so it's just sort of noise on the journey. And so, like, I try not to get lost in any of that sauce, and, you know, flip along. But anyway, not
that's
to get too
esoteric. That's such a great point, though. I love that that idea, because it's gotten to the point where it's the fifth largest asset, and nobody, like, because you think, like, I even looked it up the other day. It says 1.5 to 3% of the population has Bitcoin, but that's if they only have one wallet, which people have multiple wallets, you know. So really, is it less than 1%, you know?
It doesn't even matter. Okay, what if it's 2%?
Yeah,
right. It isn't 50%, right?
Right.
So like, it's just putting things in perspective. Mm-hmm. It's interesting because, you know, like I was a psychopath in 2016 telling people, hey, Bitcoin's gonna be $100,000 one day. So I was a psychopath. I literally was. Amazing. I was an absolute psychopath. I acknowledge the psychopath that I was. This clip is going to be used, I'm sure, out of context many times in my future. But it was absolutely crazy to tell people that it was going to be $100,000. In fact, your husband's buddy, my cousin, and many of my other cousins who would sit around poker tables with me and tell me how crazy I was when I was just telling them, hey, just take this money and go buy like 3 Bitcoin right now, and you'll love me. And many of them did, many of them didn't. Many of them that did absolutely love me, even if they didn't then. And the reality of it is, like, here I am today. I'm going to tell you it's going to be $10 million of coin, right? And that won't matter. You won't think about it in $10 million of coin. You don't think about a coffee as, like, you know, in sat terms yet, right? You know, you just think it was like $5. I don't know. I'm going to drink coffee or $10, whatever that coffee is now. But you sort of have these like pricing analysis, and it's already sort of shifting, right? You sort of already see this in for like the most art, you know, like, you know, sort of intense Bitcoiners. But the reality of it is that you sort of like, you know, it's just as psychopathic, right, to say, hey, this is going to be $100,000 in 2016, 2017. And yet, if I say the exact same thing, if I give you the same magnitude of order, even with Larry Fink and Jamie Dimon, and, you know, the whole world, like quite now at this point, being aware of it, even if they don't understand it and are touching it in some form or another every day, it's like the trajectory is clear. And I still sound like just as much of a psychopath. Here I am in 2025, gray bearded. Bitcoin's at $120,000, and I'm still the psychopath, even though I was right.
That's
and that's
crazy.
True for a lot of Bitcoiners.
It's funny because and that's the reason from what you said earlier, because being that it's the fifth largest asset and that people don't understand it, you had this idea in 2016 because you understood Bitcoin, you understood what it is and what this technology means, you know, for the world. But that's why you can predict these crazy psychopathic evaluations. But now you are saying this still from a person who understood Bitcoin from back then, and you could see that it's still growing, but people probably look at you like you're crazy because they think, well, it already reached this price, how high can it go? But it's because they don't understand Bitcoin. It's because, you know, the people that still haven't, which is such a tiny percentage of the population that understands what it actually is. So when you hear somebody that understands it, if you haven't put in the work yet, it should make sense to either wonder about it and wonder why they're saying this and why they were.
It's one of my favorite things. It's one of my favorite things Saylor's ever said. So Saylor's like taught me a few things that are like foundational to like my life moving forward. And I'll talk a little bit about it on the Bitcoin treasury side in a second. But One of those foundational things he said is just like, I don't know anybody that's looked at Bitcoin for 100 hours that doesn't leave with a favorable opinion of it. And I don't know anyone that's looked at it for 1,000 hours that absolutely isn't a psychopath like me at this point. So I just don't think, like, I don't think you can look at it more and come away with less. And that's just, it's inevitable, right? So, like, I used to stress about this in a big way. I don't know how much you know about Sunday Satoshi Service, but I used to have a cult.
I literally just found out about this, and I was going to ask you about it.
Yeah, well, I'll let you drive it. But anyway, I used to be like an orange pill, like, assassin, you know, just putting so much effort. I remember tweeting this, and this one was one of the things that, like, early when I joined Twitter, at the behest of American Auto convinced me to jump on Twitter. He's like, man, you gotta get on Twitter. He's like, dude, that's where it's all at. I'm like, no, I just read it from afar. I don't really want to participate in the mayhem. And now I'm more convinced than ever that I don't want to participate in it. But anyway, I remember tweeting something to the effect of, like, if I've ever talked to you about Bitcoin, that was my way of saying I love you. And the reality of it is, I think it resonates with a lot of Bitcoiners who, like, once they kind of, once it clicks and they recognize sort of how game changing it is, especially back then, where, like, modest amounts of money could really change people's lives, had they played the playbook out to today. And, you know, I've watched that happen hundreds, thousands of times. But I found what I realized is that I used to yell and I was crying out to try to help people in some regard, mostly because I was like, or fighting with shitcoiners. Mostly because I was actually convincing myself still. I was still like, I was stressed and I was like yelling about it and I was arguing about it and I was like so fervent about it. And I still am, but not in that way, because now, like, I know I'm right. I'm no longer like, I realize I don't have to convince myself anymore. And so that sort of outward projection just kind of went away. And, you know, I'm kind of in a place now, as politely as I can say it, where I don't argue about it. I don't debate it. I don't have any intense conversations about it anymore. I don't have the energy for that moving forward. Like, I got two kids that are growing and I'm not getting younger. But where I'm at is, I'm willing to let people cheat off of my test. So, you know, we showed up to the exam and you didn't study, and, you know, you wanted to copy off me. I'd be like, yeah, I wouldn't cover my test. I'd be like, I'd let you copy, Stacy, but I'm not going to stop mid-exam and explain to you how I got to answer C. And so that's where I'm at right now in my Bitcoin, like, sort of journey. And I've seen this for some of my other friends, especially friends of mine that have got in like 3, 4, 5, 6 years before me. I now see sort of where I am in that journey, where I'm just like, you know, I'm tired.
Well, I love this that you're saying this, because it's like, it reminds me of something. I mean, I've heard a lot of people talk about it. Like, you feel hopeless and then you find this light and then you want to, you know, spread the light with other people. And then you become that person that, you know, you just want to help others. So you feel like you're just kind of, you know, trying to break through to people, but then it's like, you're passing the torch. Like, you've done your part. You were in it so early. You're moving on to a different phase of your life where you're like, I've done enough educating. I've done enough screaming.
Yeah, I didn't feel like I was dark. My life was dope. Like, I liked life a lot before I found Bitcoin too. It just, it was just so great. And it was just such an awesome, like, life raft. But the rest of that is true. And I think like that's something that a lot of Bitcoiners resonate with, especially like my class or class before. It feels so weird to say class.
I know.
Like, there's no Toyota class. There's no Nike class. There's no Pepsi or Pia. Anyway. So yeah, it's just something that people sort of resonate with. And I think the journey's good. Like, I almost always know when someone got into Bitcoin within like 5 sentences. Or there's like,
how about me? When did I get into Bitcoin?
You've been asking all the questions. I haven't had a chance to ask any questions. And so we'll have to do this. We'll all get beers, especially if my kids have run up in your yard unknowingly. You know, I'll have to treat you and your husband and the team to beers and steaks.
But
I don't know. I mean, I presume that my presumption is, with your excitement and sort of your framing, that you're a relatively new Bitcoiner. I'd say in the last, like, you're probably within the last cycle, the last couple of years, maybe like a post-COVID baby.
Yes.
Yeah. And, you know, like, I always can tell based on how, if someone thinks Dennis Porter is serious. So I think if you think Dennis Porter is serious, then you got in after 2021.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny.
If you realize he's a fool and a clown and a con artist.
He was supposed to be on my show and I had to cancel like the day before. And
he's just,
but then he never responded to me again. So I'm like, I don't care. I'm like, I was just like,
I'm authentic.
No, that's cool. Yeah. I mean, I don't really care either. I mean, I'm just who I am. And, but yeah, he just didn't respond. So I'm like, yeah, that's cool. If you want to join me, that's fine. You know, if you don't, you know, I've been having, like, not just bigger names, which I'm very excited about, But you know, just any Bitcoiner, I just love talking to people about how they got into it, which that's the next thing I wanted to ask you too, is how did you, like, what was your beginning like? Like, how did you?
Yeah, my story's pretty well known. I had an employee. I obviously own a tech company. I had an employee who was like, boss, you should look at this Bitcoin thing. And I was like, yo, Jeremy, you should show up to work on time. How about that? And anyway, Jeremy's a smart kid. I met him when he was a student at Lane Tech High School, which is where I went to high school. You're probably familiar with Lane Tech. Mm-hmm. And really, really bright kid. And I was supporting the robotics team and some other sort of like groups at the school at the time, and was, you know, just trying to do whatever I could to be helpful. And anyway, I met Jeremy and we started, you know, hiring a bunch of interns out of there. And anyway, he's the first person that talked to me about Bitcoin. I started looking into it. Then I had buddies out in the Valley that were part of that conversation. And
but you started looking into it right away when he told you, or were you just?
No, I mean, so, yes and no. I mean, it wasn't like, you know, I was like, when people tell me like they found Bitcoin and they was like, oh my God, I figured it out. I was like, what are you talking about? Like, mm-hmm. That makes no sense to me. But like, people tell me they read the white paper. I was like, really? Like, I don't believe you. It's such a boring piece. It's such a boring document. Like, I read it after my net worth changed significantly, you know, and I'm an interested, curious dude. So I never buy that shit. But anyway, what I would tell you is this, my journey was a little tricky. I was buying it, trading it, not knowing what it was. I didn't know what the difficulty adjustment was. I didn't know 21 million cap. I didn't know a lot of things. I was buying ETH at $7. Mm-hmm. I was buying Litecoin, anything that showed up on GDAX, I bought. Then GDAX got bought for those who remember, they got bought by Coinbase Pro. And then, you know, whatever, it became Coinbase Pro because back then it didn't have as good of a trading GUI and Coinbase knew it. And so that was sort of their acquisition there, but it doesn't matter. The point is I heard about it from a number of different places, but the first person I heard it from was Jeremy. And that's why Jeremy was able to keep a job, you know, where anybody might've been fired 15 times for a long time. And then I had some buddies out west that were, you know, that were getting into Bitcoin and crypto. And sort of that was, you know, another touch point. And then, you know, I was on this thing called the internet too. And it was just sort of a multifaceted thing. But yeah, you know, by the time, you know, sort of the block size wars and the bear market in 2017, 2018, that long bear market really allowed for me to sort of dig into Bitcoin in a much more substantial way. I felt really crappy. What's that?
Was that when you decided, like, was there a lot of toxicity coming out and were you more defensive at that time? Is that when you started?
No, because I didn't participate. I didn't really care. I was weirded out by Bitcoiners. I find Bitcoiners to be like way different than like the people that I would have normally hung out with. I love all my Bitcoin friends now, but man, like, I had to get used to the concentration of autism. I had to get used to the concentration of weird. Like, these are people that I would not want around my wife and kids. But anyway, I where I'm at now is a different place. But anyway, I would say I got a chance to really, like, I bought the top in 2017. I bought like 19,400. I remember buying a very substantial buy, especially at the time for me, that was a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And I was telling a lot of people to buy at that time, you know, anywhere between, you know, 2,000 to 15,000. And it ran up really quickly. I mean, like, you know, for those who remember like 20, God, I always mix up 2016 and 2017, but it was like from fall to winter, it just ripped up to like 20 grand and not quite 20 grand. We didn't really pierce 20 grand. And in that mind, my mind at that point was, we're getting to 50 grand for sure. We might be at 100,000. Like, I remember being at the Chicago Symphony Orchestra and at the welcome Yule for Christmas or something like that. It was like Christmas time. And Santa, who, you know, famously comes down, was like, you know, telling, you know, reading the Christmas list, wish list, is like, sort of, you know, this is like a tradition every year. And it was the first time he said Bitcoin on there. And when Santa at the welcome Yule at the Chicago Symphony Orchestra with mostly senior citizens sitting there says Bitcoin, I'm convinced we're going to 100,000. There's just no doubt in my mind. And so anyway, a lot of people I knew bought $10,000, $15,000, $18,000 Bitcoin. And then in the bear market, you're watching it bleed and bleed and bleed. And my shitcoin bags were bleeding and bleeding and bleeding even more. And so it was really in that bear market plus Joe Carlisari sensibilities. My partners were really sort of like, we all sort of were starting to formulate as Bitcoin maximalists. the block size wars allowed for me to sort of look at things a little differently. And so I don't know, it was just the culmination of things. Like, I didn't have all these epiphany moments that everybody else had. I just sort of had this, like, you know, different information at different times and was able to piece it all together.
And you had a good group of friends then too, so it's like,
yeah, I'm lucky. I honestly, sometimes I think about it and I'm like, wait, how are these my friends? Like, how did I like end up at this nexus of the world where some of the, you know, smartest people in this particular topic in the most integrated ways and the most, you know, people that are moved, like, you know, and I literally could spend an hour just talking about like the crazy people I've met. You know, I mean, I could probably spend 10 hours, you know, just, you know, sort of the crazy people.
That's why you probably are so sane compared to all the autistic crazies out there, even though you call yourself, you know,
I present normal.
Yeah, because I think a lot of the people that find Bitcoin and are completely alone about it and they don't find actual people to talk to on like X or something about it, and they're just figuring this out on their own, they sound completely insane and they're trying to find somebody to connect with and understand this with them. So I think they totally sound nuts. But I think when you have friends like you did, you had this like support group kind of already. So you didn't have to be like the total crazy one because you just had people just, you know, like a support system, you know, so.
Yeah, sure.
So that Satoshi service thing, then, did you do that because you were tired of all the craziness and you just wanted, because you were called like Father John for a while?
It literally still happens.
Yeah.
Like, people meet me in the hallway at a Bitcoin conference and like, yo, Father John.
That's awesome.
All right. So how this happened? So Clubhouse and Twitter Spaces were like really popping during the pandemic. And at this point, I could become public about Bitcoin. And I also listened to like the autists like at high levels. And so there was just always this weird like thing where like normies would come to Bitcoin. The autists were like, rah, 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 rah. And then it was just like, oh God, it was like so cringe. And so I sort of found myself at the intersection of sort of this lost in translation sort of perspective and being able to talk Bitcoin sensibly to humans that are just working every day. Aren't like sitting on the internet, you know, watching memes and Sailor and, you know, and back then it was like, I mean, Sailor wasn't even a character back then, but it was like, you know, Antonopoulos and Bitcoin Jesus, which I know is not a favorite of Bitcoiners today, but back then Roger was, you know, a huge Bitcoin educator. I don't know, there's just like tons of names, right? But anyway, point is like Bitcoin Clubhouse was just kind of going and I was just sort of becoming a voice there and just met a bunch of people that I'd, you know, kind of found my tribe of like, okay, these guys are weird as hell, but I'm sort of weird and they're the only ones that want to talk to me about Bitcoin. And that's all I want to talk about right now. So I sort of met this crew, but the toxic vibes were just like, even though I mean, I sometimes can be toxic too. Like, I don't like to put up with like scammery and dumb shit, like dumb crap. It's like, it's not my vibe. On the other hand, like I feel like someone's like genuinely trying to learn and like they got scammed because they bought Bcash thinking it was Bitcoin. I'm not like, you know, like ripping their heads off. And so I don't know, I think I was just hungover one morning. It was like a Sunday morning and Bitcoin Tina, I don't know if you know who Bitcoin Tina is, but Bitcoin Tina, I love you, Bitcoin Tina, I miss you, bro. Actually, I talked to him last week, I don't know why I said that. Bitcoin Tina was just, he was just fired up, man, all the time. It was like Sunday and I had a hangover and he's just yelling and he's screaming and he is just. And so I literally just started another room and I said, I just called it like Sunday Satoshi service, woosa, like put the peace emoji hands up and everybody started to flock in. And, you know, Deacon would eventually wind up being Deacon T-Bane. He came in and he started reading prayers and then someone else came in and they started to sing a song and people started to come in and confess their shit coining sins. And I'd grown up in like the Catholic church and I was like the lead altar boy.
That's amazing.
And so it was just this weird sort of confluence where we sort of like, it was just very organic. It happened like super organically. And then
It
was like, yo, are you going to do it next week? And I'm like, oh man. And like the next week it was like 7 hours of people confessing shit and sins. I was tired. I was like, yo, I got kids. I got to go to dinner, man. I'm tired. And then it was like a thing. And then like everybody was on there. I mean, like, Max Kaiser would come on there and do his little Southern Baptist preaching.
That's so crazy. You know,
Eric Weiss had been on there. And I can't remember. I think Sailor popped in from time to time. And I mean, just like everybody, American Hoddle and Tina and NVK and like Jimmy Song and, you know, Brandon Quidham. And I literally have lost track. But everyone would just come in and be like, yo, can I do a guest spot on Sunday Satoshi? I was like, sure. And then we'd have like sponsors reaching out to us. I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa.
For this Twitter is not space.
Well, like my buddy Alex Adelman, who's the CEO of Lolly, he reached out. In fact, what happened was I yelled out the word hallelujah that first day.
Oh my God, that's great.
I don't know how or why, but I just said hallelujah. And everyone just started cracking up. And apparently a friend of mine, Aubrey, who I think she's still at Lolly. She works with Alex at Lolly, and she went on Twitter and she like made this like Merriam dictionary in like tweet where it's like hallelujah and did like a phonetic spelling and then like, you know, kind of made it look like a dictionary entry.
Oh,
and it
God.
Just started like kind of trending and kind of like became a,
that
you know,
should
thin,
stay
kind of
a, went viral. That should stay a phrase. I hope it.
Hallelujah. Yeah, I still do. People will literally yell that to me when they see me like at random conferences.
That's or so fun.
Like, tweet it at me or DM me. So yeah, it just turned into a thing. And then people were like asking me to like marry them. And then we did this like widespread baptism and it was just all a joke. But it really became a thing. And I was exhausted by it. I was so exhausted.
You literally get your ordained minister certificate online and actually.
We had like seven deacons. We had Spanish deacons and Jamaican deacons. And, you know, we had core devs that were like deacons and
oh my God, they could be at like a, you know, destination wedding or something and be playing your Twitter space.
Still won't say who it is, but there is a very wealthy, you know, whale that asked me to be at their wedding as part of like a thing. And I couldn't do that's when I knew I had to shut it down. That's when I was like, okay, this is a cult. No one has died. This needs to end. And so that's kind of what happened.
But yeah, it was Corey, like a peaceful space, but it was fun. And it's, but it's.
Well, what it was is it sort of became a cool educational playground. And it was the one place where it was the unsaid rule that you could not be like, you couldn't be an ass.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing about it is in church, people know not to be an ass. You can't be rude at church. So even Tina and even like the most toxic Bitcoin maximalist, Jimmy Song would come on. He's like, he hates a shitcoin more than anybody. I miss you, by the way, Jimmy. I know you're not going to see this, but I hope you do because she's
hope
doing
he does.
Good work.
I hope he does.
Yeah. And he's brilliant. But yeah, it would just be like anybody that you can think of that is like the most hardcore maximalist. They would just for that hour or two would just turn off Bitcoin Minstrel. I forget Bitcoin Minstrel. He used to write this like these dope songs. Like I remember one of them was, you got to go listen to this stuff.
Yeah.
It was like, he was like, I saved Satoshis because Satoshi saved me. And I think that's the most brilliant line ever.
Yes.
But anyway, yeah, so it was a thing. It was a thing. I famously started a cult on accident. I disbanded it on purpose. And it was, you know, I remember, you know, maybe one capstone to this.
This is amazing.
I had like Easter at my house and I couldn't do Sunday Satoshi service because I had Easter. And I knew that I couldn't let my mom, who's like a hardcore Catholic, find out about this. And so I like canceled. I was like, hey, you know, we're going to cancel this Sunday service. We'll be back next week. I got literally dozens. And I know you think I'm kidding. Dozens of DMs like, yo, is everything okay? We're waiting and we don't see the room for church. Am I blocked? Am I not able to, something happen? I mean, I literally dozens of them. And it was just 1 week. And I was like, oh my God, we got to stop this.
How many people would be in there?
Oh my God, 5,000, 4,000.
God.
Yeah, it'd be absurd. It was just like, I mean, I literally, you have to understand, this was not something I contrived. This was a joke I played and it literally just took like immediate life. And it was like, oh shit, this is real now. Yeah.
But that is like the most fun thing ever. That is, I mean, you just made people's week. You know, you started off that week doing that and it was just like a fun place for everyone to hang out. And yeah, I can see how it got too big, but I love how you said I literally started a cult and I had to shut it down.
I accidentally started a cult. I purposely disbanded.
Maybe that's why people say that saying is Bitcoin a cult, because of you.
Oh, it really is. I mean, that was the joke, right? The joke was making fun of the cult. Mm-hmm. The problem is the joke became too true. I was like, well, wait a second. I can't actually be a cult.
The moment you yelled out hallelujah.
Oh my God, that was just like totally extemporaneous. Like I don't know what happened or that's why, but someone was just like confessing their sins.
I love that they confess their shitcoining sins.
Oh yeah, I mean, it's on YouTube. Like if you go search up, you know, Sunday Satoshi service on YouTube.
Okay, you know, well, you know what? By you doing this episode with me today and talking about this, how I talked about passing the torch, I have an entire community on X that we created and. I mean, my group is called the Paranoid Bitcoin Anarchists.
Okay.
And there's another group.
Sorry, that doesn't make me nervous at all. I don't know that type of crew at all.
Okay. But they're cool people. We're just more like we just say that because people think we're paranoid. Like when we believe in Bitcoin, it's more like a joke because normal people that when they don't understand Bitcoin, they think you're crazy, you know, so that it's kind of like a joke in that way. But it's not like anything. It's just people that we connected with early on. But we have another group called the Bitcoin Army, and they host spaces every day now. And we have some really cool people that are hosting spaces, but they have.
Those are my critics, I think. Some of those are my critics. Really? They're like, they don't want me to issue equity in my company or something. They think I'm a scammer.
Bitcoin, I can't tell. Bitcoin Army people?
I think one of them is an Uber driver that I didn't tip 200% is what I think.
I'm going to have a talk with these people.
I think it's like, you know, I was actually hoping for better trolls. Yeah. I don't know that I've made it until I have like higher quality trolls. The problem is I'm also friends with all the good trolls, mm-hmm. and they've already trolled me about all the things you can troll me. Like, you know,
I've been trolled a little bit.
Well, I want better trolls. I told Yellow, I said, forget it. Every 4 years we have like new training for noobs or every cycle there's like noob whatever. Mm-hmm. I was like, bro, we don't need any more noobs. All this stuff's already there. Ben Session has a video for every mm-hmm. hardware wallet. Michael Saylor talks every day. We don't need any more of this.
Yeah.
What we need is new troll training.
Yeah.
We need to crowdsource this. You need to lead this. You need to go make sure that the next generation of Bitcoiners properly know how to troll, because these guys are like, I've been disappointed.
Good at it. Yeah.
I've been disappointed in the Uber drivers.
Well, there's been a couple. So I think with me, you know, my channel's new. It started in February, but and again, I'm a paranoid Bitcoin anarchist, but I see new things that come out and I'm interested in stuff. And I sometimes get hate for different things. Sometimes, you know, but then you think if you're not doing something that people have an opinion about, then you won't get any sort of
trolling. Oh, I just assume they're right. I actually just assume they're right. I don't care. The only opinion that literally matters, and I figure this out, this is going to be totally juvenile. Mm-hmm. But like, my gorgeous girlfriend could tell me I'm getting chubby. It would not matter. My daughter told me that she's like, Daddy, your abs are looking a little, like she said something like that.
Yeah.
I starve for 3 days, right? So literally no one opinion, like mm-hmm. you can't hurt, like nobody can hurt me the way Aria can hurt me. Mm-hmm. And that's it. No, literally you could be 6'4", 260, you know, be like the most rhetorically sharp dude ever. And you can't, my little 42-pound 7-year-old is going to be the one that can
that's
knock me
so
out.
So awesome. Yeah, no, it's true. It's like, we care about them. Like they actually, like my daughter says stuff like that to me. She'll critique me a little bit. I'm pretty thick skinned. And that's why when people even talk about how, you know, when you start a channel or put yourself out there, people are like, how, you know, I'm worried that people will judge me. I'm like, well, I don't care. If people want to judge me, they can judge me. But the thing is, like with your company, recently I got interested in the BitKey, you know, because of the multi-sig. You know,
sure.
I like it.
I actually play with it a little bit too.
Okay. I like it. It's a new idea. Some people freak out about the idea of no seed phrase. And I'm like, well, mm-hmm. in a way it's, you don't want a single point of failure. It's a good new option for people who are just getting into Bitcoin, want to store it and are terrified to lose their seed phrase. So, I mean, I promoted it a little bit. I made a little video and, you know, there was a lot of support in my group.
They gave you crap and called you a show.
Yeah. Huh? Yeah.
They gave you crap and called you a show. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you like.
Pretty much. Yeah, they're like, oh, you got a good sponsorship. I'm like, no, I didn't. I didn't get a sponsorship. I just like it. I think it's cool.
It doesn't matter.
And but then it's like, you're not a true Bitcoiner if you don't have a seed phrase and store your Bitcoin that way. But at the same time, when I think about companies like yours or any treasury company coming out, they're probably not giving one seed phrase to one person saying, hey, you're in charge of this. Like you. I wonder how your company's.
Yeah, I mean, we're public. We use Casa. We're using AnchorWatch. We're getting insured by AnchorWatch. I'm also an investor in AnchorWatch. Mm-hmm. I publicly disclose that anytime I talk mm-hmm. about it. I love Rob and Becca. They're great. I was one of the first investors in AnchorWatch. American HODL called me. I just finished interviewing Saylor. I had the worst migraine ever in the Austin airport, and he called me. He's like, "We're gonna do this." I said, "Great, bye," and you know, off. AnchorWatch is gone, so they've done great. So we use AnchorWatch. We, you know, have an insurance product behind it. We have processes at Framework that are really well documented around the control mechanisms as well. Yeah. That is all being upgraded and updated, reevaluated as part of our transition to AnchorWatch. But You know, I used to be sort of like security guru early days, and used to spend a lot more time sort of like, you know, I mean, back then, like just getting people to go to like multi-sig was a thing, right? Like it was like Unchained and Casa, and that was the way to do it. Most people didn't roll their own, even until like probably Sparrow sort of became more widespread, but I'm hardly the tech guy. I would always like, I always like lean on my genius guys, and I'm hardly like the dangerous like coder, but yeah, I mean, I actually played with the BitKey. I think for a lot of noobs, it makes a lot of sense. Do I think it's the ultimate solution? Absolutely not. I think there's trade-offs, but you know, if you're telling me holding it on Coinbase or holding it in BitKey and on a BitKey device, especially for like people that have less than a coin, which is crazy. I can't even think of that. It's like, I used to think like $100,000 and be like, oh, if you got like 20, 25 coins, and you probably need to be thinking about multi-sig, because that 20, 25 coins is 100 grand now, but that's going to be like 1.5 million in like 2 years. And now here we are. Yeah. And I guess it was more like 5 years, but well, here we are anyway.
It's a good point. And people that think,
but yeah, so you're always kind of thinking ahead. But like at this point, especially like for folks, you know, for me, this is not going to be a popular opinion either. Like for me, I've oranged more people into iBit or FBTC because they just can move money in a few. Like I can get under the Charles Schwab and be like, bloop, 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 bloop. And yeah, listen, they don't have spot Bitcoin. I want to encourage them to have spot Bitcoin. But having it in their retirement accounts is basically a forced hodl for 20 years, right? Or 30 years, whatever, however young they are. You know, it's better than not having any Bitcoin.
Right.
And so
that's what I think too.
I don't let evil or like perfect be sort of the enemy of good or better or just doing, you know, one step at a time. And it doesn't mean they can't go buy spot Bitcoin later either, right?
Yeah. And that's why I was, because again, I'm a maxi, you know, but I'm also a hairdresser. So I talk to
Stacey, you're new. Let me give you the breakdown of this. You have mostly, you know, Bitcoiners, I'll try to tell you they're libertarian. They love libertarian principles, right? They're the first person that'll tell you if you sell your Bitcoin or do anything with your Bitcoin, they'll be like the first Nazi, your first communist to tell you exactly what to do. Listen, there's no such thing. They're just like, it's your money.
Yeah.
You do whatever the hell you want to do with your money. Mm-hmm. You want to hodl your money? Hodl your money. You want to spend it on, you know, a new hairdo? You know, spend it on a new hairdo. It's your money. Now, I would advise not, but like, do what the hell you want to do, and don't let weirdos on the internet that claim to be libertarian tell you what to do with your money. It's yours.
Yes. Yeah.
Can I curse on this episode because my kids aren't around?
What about it?
Am I allowed to curse?
Oh, so yeah. I don't get my kids.
Tell them to fuck themselves. Be like, how are you a libertarian telling people what to do with their money?
I know. And that's why I want to make it more like when I talk to people, I think that when I had like this older guy who took his retirement account and he bought Fidelity, he transferred literally all of his retirement accounts to Fidelity Bitcoin after.
Okay.
And I was so proud of him. And normally people would be like, why didn't you tell him to buy Bitcoin? Why would you tell him, like, good for you that you bought the treasury? I'm like, because he's got all of his money tied up in traditional finance for his whole life. He's not going to take a huge tax hit just to go buy Bitcoin and sell it all.
These are the autists that I had to get used to. Right? Mm-hmm. They're just like not pragmatic humans. They don't understand things. Most of them don't have children. If they have children, they're probably like, you know, apps. I don't know. I don't want to like condemn people, but listen, you got to live your own life. When you go to sleep at night, they're not going to cross your path. And, you know, when they go to sleep at night, they don't give a shit about you either. You know, they care about their kids. They care about their wife. They care about their immediate island, just like everyone else, just like you, just like me. Mm-hmm. Right. When I'm going to bed at night, I'm thinking about my two nuggets. I'm not thinking about idiots on Twitter who care about if I'm holding something in Casa or if I'm holding something in Sparrow.
Yeah.
Don't fuck yourself. It's my money.
Yeah. And that's why I'm like, I like, you know, if I see a cool new product or I see something that I believe in, there's been a lot of people who talk about people that are shilling a new wallet, like let's say the BitKey. And they're just thinking, well, they're getting paid to promote this. I'm like, but if you're promoting something or talking about it, it's because you actually think it's a good thing. It's not because you think it's terrible that you're just like,
well, I mean, I think some people do and I think some people don't. Yeah. I mean, you know, listen, I think it's a function of integrity. I don't tell people what to do or what not to do. I don't think I've ever shilled a product. I built a few things that I thought made sense for the world. You know, I have a company that I believe in. I'm putting effort into. Some people might say I'm shilling it.
I shilled a Twitter space that caused a cultish movement.
I screwed that up once. But in fact, here's the funny thing is we never took a donation. People would try to donate money to us. And we're like, no, we won't. So Alex sponsored a Sunday Satoshi service. Uh-huh. But I was like, dude, you can't pay me. So what we did is we just took money and we just gave Satoshis out, or we gave hardware wallets out or whatever. So
that's crazy.
We were a non-denominational church that denominated in Bitcoin.
People were like, here, take my sats.
And we reverse tithe. We reversed it. And we must have given out 2, 3, 4. I don't remember. Someone can do that. Someone can go look it up. We probably gave it like 2, 3, 4 Bitcoin out, probably.
That's insane.
Yeah.
So, wow.
Anyway.
That's so amazing. That was an incredible story. You are such a cool person to talk to. I like your attitude. I like that you don't care what people think, but you're also, you know, you were tired of all the toxicness and you started this phase that you did that you think is it was a crazy thing looking back, but I think it's pretty awesome. So I love hearing about all that. I don't know if Twitter even has a database so I could go listen to these because I think they get rid of them after some time.
No. So they were, most of them weren't on Twitter. Most of them were actually on, like, we like simulcasted it, but you just go to, there's a YouTube page with, just go to go to a Sunday Satoshi service on YouTube. There's 5 or 6 or 7 episodes still there.
I'm going
to
do it.
You get a good vibe. I mean, they're long, but you know, you can trip through them. Yeah, it's going to feel like a weird, like, mishmash of Catholic Church, Baptist Church, and
it's gonna be like a time.
It'd be like you know, for instance, it'd be like we would always say, go bless, we bless you, or you're forgiven in the name of Hal, Satoshi, and the Holy Main Chain. You know, it'd be like all these little Catholic, or like sort of intermingles or whatever.
That is the funnest.
We're all contemporaneous. It would all just joke, or people rewrote the Hail Mary or Our Father. All these types of prayers were rewritten.
That is the fun. You know, that is the coolest. Yeah, and then just like taking a trip back in time, like seeing people that, you know, that I didn't grow up listening to, but because I'm class of 2020. So it's not like I was around during some of the early days where these people were teaching people. So it'll be fun to go back and hear what people were saying before I was around. So that would be definitely something I'm going to do for sure.
It's so funny to even think about it in that way too, which is scary because now I feel old, but it is what it is.
Bitcoin, no, I mean, and it wasn't that long ago.
It was like 5x. It's like dog years, you know?
But it's not that long ago. It seems like it is, but it's not. And just like you said, like about the whole thinking about multi-sig or not, you think, well, I only have $1,000 now, like how you were saying back then. You thought people with 25 Bitcoins would have to think about multi-sig, but now if you have less than one, you said, or around one,
Whenever I use the word should at this point in my life, I'm like, I start to be like, no, don't tell people what they should do.
Yeah.
If they want to ask what you're doing, maybe you can tell them what you're doing, but I've started to move into a phase in my life where I don't know what you should do. I'll tell you what I'm doing sometimes.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of why I wanted to start this channel, because I have so many people that know that I've been into Bitcoin for years and they always ask me about it. And I love talking to Bitcoiners, but when there's like everybody if there's a new person that's like, so tell me about Bitcoin, I'm like, well, go watch my YouTube channel, because then now I can just send you my channel. You could learn from people that got into it and why they think it's good. You know, so I don't have to repeat myself so much, because it gets, you know, it's time consuming, you know, so I don't want to talk about it nonstop, because I do get on the topic and I don't know where to quit sometimes. So I feel like I'm.
Well, I mean, you've become the Bitcoin person in your world. And for like a lot of people, probably people who are listening to this, they're that person too. I am in my world. And it's just like, at a certain point, it's just like, dude, like I love Bitcoin, but I love a lot of things. And like, I just, there's not much that I want to talk about every day, you know, I love golf. I don't want to play golf every day either. You know,
I'm still in the phase where I want to talk about it nonstop, and I'm fascinated by Bitcoin.
Yeah, you're four or five years away.
Yeah, probably
4 or 5 years away. Like I can always tell, like, so your next cycle, you're going to be like, I think like sort of, because so, I don't think in these 4 year cycles, I know everyone believes in these 4 year cycles. And I think the adoption is so different between different communities. Like, you know, you had like libertarians and ANCAPs in like 2011. You had like, you know, pedophiles and drug dealers in 2013, 2014, or like maybe like 2012, 2013. And then you had like sort of the tech bros in 2016, 2017 kind of thing. So it's like much different. Like now you got, you know, Larry Fink, right? Mm-hmm. So you got a much different. So I don't believe in the 4 year cycles, but anyway, I think you're probably like 2 to 4 years away, depending on how much effort and time you put into it. Mm-hmm. And then you're just going to be like,
yeah.
You know, you'll be too rich. You'll be too tired. Your kids will be older. You know, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Like, there'll be all these things that sort of, you know, factor you into, you know, you'll help, but you won't be
the next group of people that will do what you have done and what I'm currently trying to do.
Yeah, well, have fun. And you know, it sounds like it's working so far. So keep it up.
It's going good. I'm enjoying it. So, and I'm so thankful for you joining me today. This has been amazing.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm so excited for what you're doing with your company. And I can't wait to see how it goes going forward. But yeah, keep it up. I can't wait to check out Sunday Satoshi. Wait, what's it called? Yeah. Sunday Satoshi Service.
Okay. Sunday Satoshi Service. Yeah, okay. But yeah, well, appreciate you following along. I don't know if like people want to follow along, just follow Stack and Sats Inc.
Yes.
I don't know. We're not doing anything that special. We're just stacking Bitcoin in a healthy way. And for some people, that seems to be really crazy and novel. For us, it just seems to be sensible. So that's what we're up to.
Yes, I'm glad. And I will definitely share your link below. Thank you so much. Thanks for hanging out with me today.
My next guest is another mind-blowing supernova. Subscribe and turn on notifications so you don't miss it.